Well, the Fight for 15, the movement of low-wage workers, continues its mission to raise the minimum wage and gain a voice for employees in the workplace. Here in the Metro, Stand Up KC has been the face of that movement. Today, we want to introduce you to another organization in town that has joined the battle, the Fannie Lou Hamer Women's Committee. Its members form what one of our guests calls the backbone in many ways of the labor movement. Joining me now here in the studio are Crystal McLemore. She's a founding member of the Fannie Lou Hamer Women's Committee. She's 25 and the mother of two and works as a certified nursing assistant for $9 an hour. Crystal, nice to have you. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Michaela Houston's also here. She's a single mom working full-time in the fast food industry for $11.40 an hour with no benefits for her or her two-year-old son. She's a member of the Fannie Lou Hamer's Women's Committee. And Michaela, nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, Crystal and Michaela, did you two have to take time off work to be here today? How's this working?
Well, I actually had to leave a little early, but it's okay.
Are you able to take paid time off from your jobs, Michaela, or can you make up hours you take off? How does it work?
Sometimes when I'm lucky, I'll be able to make up hours, but no, not right now. Sometimes I'm not able to.
So you're volunteering your time for the sake of public radio. We appreciate that.
Well, yeah, no problem.
That's good to have you here. Well, Crystal, the Fannie Lou Hamer Women's Committee is only a couple of years old. It started back in 2014. Tell us a little bit about Fannie Lou Hamer.
Fannie Lou Hamer. Oh, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
The Fannie Lou Hamer Club, committee, I'm sorry. We founded it back in October of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a group of low-wage women who come together to talk about our issues, not only on the workplace, but in our everyday lives, and kind of get a perspective of what each other goes through at work and at home.
So you're sort of helping each other out here a little bit.
Yes, for the most part.
With a name like that attached to the committee, how much responsibility do you feel to live up to Fannie Lou's legacy?
Not a lot, but it's like more inspiring to live up to her legacy, mm-hmm. if I may say.
Yeah. And Michaela, this is a women-only group.
Yes.
Why?
Well, most women in the workplace, we have to deal with more issues than men. Like, for example, we have to deal with discrimination, not equal pay, something that
men struggle with both those things, too.
Well, yeah, but for women, one thing that me personally that I've had to deal with is non-paid maternity leave.
Ah.
I had my daughter back in 2014, and 3 weeks after having her, I actually had to return to work because I didn't get paid for that time off, and I had to take care of both of my kids. It was depressing. My body hadn't healed all the way. I had to have people bring her to my job, and I would have to take unpaid breaks to feed her.
Mm-hmm.
It was just depressing having to be away from her. I don't think any woman or anybody should have to be away from their kid. They shouldn't have to choose their kid or their job.
And if I may add,
yes,
I'm sorry,
please. Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago, I went through not maternity leave, but like health care problems. My son himself was sick, and I had to call out of work for 2 days in a row and missed out on 2 days of pay, and I was not able to make those times back up.
And that's tough.
So, yes.
The impact of that is what for you?
You said what, sir?
The impact of that is what for you?
Missing out on hours, and then, like, when I get the check, you can tell. Like, you can see. Like, I was missing 2 days worth of pay.
Yeah.
2 days.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to bring into our conversation now by phone from North Carolina, Rosalyn Pellis. She's a labor organizer who retired in 2013 after serving as director of the Civil, Human, and Women's Rights Department of the AFL-CIO. And, Roz, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I quoted you in the introduction as saying that women, specifically black women, are the backbone in many ways of the labor movement. What did they and what do they bring to it?
So it is important for everybody to understand that women and black women in particular are really the engines, often in organizing drives. They're the leaders when it comes to actually signing up workers and doing education with workers. So we become the backbone of these movements, and often we are not respected in these movements, and we are often not leaders in these movements. But historically, that's been the role of women inside the labor movement and other social justice movements in this country.
Well, Michaela, you attended the Midwest School for Women Workers in Chicago just last summer. What did they teach you there?
We learned about more rights on the job, like what we have to face and stuff like that. And it was also very cool to be with other women. Like, they already have their unions. We're in 15 and a union. We're still fighting for our union. So to be able to go to school sitting next to women that already are established in their unions and we're still fighting for ours, they were more proud of us and we were proud of them. So it was very rewarding.
And the union you envision is for which workers, and what do you see, what do you want to have happen here?
A 15 and a union.
Explain that to me. A 15 for what?
For our wages.
Mm-hmm.
And then a union.
$15 an hour you're
yes,
talking
sir.
About.
Yes, mm-hmm. sir. And then the union is for all of us to come together and have a voice on our jobs and more dignity on our jobs and let our employers know how we wanted to be treated. Like the 15 and the union, we're asking it from our employers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, Raj, you've been participating in organizing since the 1960s. What is one strategy that was key then that is still vital today?
So I think the one strategy is really the kind of one-on-one where workers talk to each other and really support each other as they try to build unions, as they try to get better wages and better benefits. And so these relationships are extremely important and cannot be replaced by a social media, though that helps it, it can't be replaced by that. So workers spend an incredible amount of time talking to each other, visiting each other's homes, visiting each other on the workplace, just to do education, just to do a strong worker-to-worker building relationships.
And Raj, you also say that organizing today isn't just a labor issue. Why not?
It really is not. And I think what we see in the Fight for 15 campaign is a brilliant example of that. The labor movement cannot be seen as a movement in and of itself. You know, the labor movement has to be seen as part of the larger social justice movement. And folks who've been involved in the Fight for 15 understand this, and they have become a model for the rest of the labor movement. And that gives you a chance to be in coalition with others. It also ensures that folks who fight for labor rights are also fighting for civil rights, and folks who are fighting for women's rights are fighting for labor rights. So that coming together of people will build a strong movement for social justice throughout the country. And the Fight for 15 campaign has just been exemplary in modeling that kind of organizing.
And organizers have to be active in places beyond the workplace, if I hear you right. Where else?
So organizers are not just active in their workplace, but they're active in their churches and in their synagogues and in their mosques. They're active in the PTA. So these are all places where organizers both work with other people, but also get skills necessary to do the work of an organizer.
Hmm.
So we are very all-sided as organizers and as workers. And we bring all that to bear when we're trying to change the way we are treated at work and to change our wages in the workplace.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Fight for 15, the movement of low-wage workers that's continuing its mission to raise the minimum wage and gain a voice for employees in the workplace. A documentary about all this, Standing on My Sister's Shoulders, is showing tomorrow evening at 7 at the Tivoli Theater in Westport. Rosalind Pelissa will be speaking following the event, the film, at 8 o'clock. That's tomorrow evening at 7 over at the Tivoli. Crystal, the living wage grabs, you know, a lot of the media attention these days, but what are some of the other things that workers like you are asking for, things that highlight why this is more than just a labor issue?
Well, workers like me, workers like all low-wage...
Got a cough.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We're asking for people to put themselves in our shoes. The lawmakers who appealed our ordinance for the low wage raise. We would just like them to put themselves in our shoes and see how it is for us to go to work all day and then come home and see the looks on our kids' faces when we can't get them what they want or they don't have what they need. Or, you know, we come home from work and maybe our lights are shut off, or maybe, you know, the water's not running, or we're late on our rent, or, you know, stuff like things like that nature of that nature.
Well, what do you say to folks who might be listening here today who might be thinking, hey, you know, if those are your concerns, then buck up, go to college, and get a better job sometime down the road?
Well, I would just say that is, you're entitled to your opinion. But for some of us, we don't have that option. We don't have the option to actually to do those type of things. Sometimes you have to do what you have to do right at the moment. Like from taken from another personal experience of mine, back in 2014, I was working like a dog at Taco Bell, working day and night, pregnant and everything. And we ended up still for a whole year living in our apartment with no hot water. We had to boil.
You couldn't afford it.
We couldn't afford it. We would have to boil water on the stove to give my son a bath or to cook or anything that had to do with hot water. We would have to boil it. I also became homeless while working at Taco Bell, found myself in a shelter for some time. And before that, you know, I didn't really have anywhere to stay, and I had just had my daughter. So it was kind of hard, you know.
And your point is you're working and working hard.
And I'm working, yeah, and I'm working. And it's not like my money's, like, I don't have a job, and I'm laying around, and I'm lazy, you know. I'm pregnant, and I'm working, and I'm catching buses to make sure my son's back and forth to school like he needs to be, and, like, and everything. And so it's like, you know, we work, and we work, and we work. And, you know, even trying to get an education, you still have to make sure that you're making money to make sure that you can provide for your kids. And even still, you're still finding yourself struggling.
Michaela, you were saying before you're making $11.40 an hour. What expenses do you have to cover on a wage like that? What's your own situation like?
For starters, I have bills that unpaid bills that I have to pay off, gas, necessities for my son, like, you know, clothes, food for him, how to get back and forth from his daycare now, and how to get back and forth from my job, gas money. And my son has no health care. I have no health care. So it's kind of hard for, like, every time he's sick and he has to go to the doctors and I get a bill back saying that it's like $200 and something. I'm just like, ooh, where am I going to get that from?
You don't have health insurance.
I do not. And I get it offered through my job. I also work at Taco Bell too, but the health care for them is too expensive and it really doesn't cover anything.
What about the Affordable Care Act?
I never tried that. I never knew anything about it.
Might be an option.
Yes, I will be looking for some health care. I will be.
How's your son feeling right now?
He's better. He had the medicine for it, and he's still healing.
Yeah. Let's talk about politics just for just a moment here. I mean, here in Missouri, the General Assembly killed Kansas City's move to increase the minimum wage. Big issue a few months ago. Is your group reaching out directly to state lawmakers, Crystal, and what kind of reception are you getting?
Well, like I said before, they repealed our ordinance for the minimum wage.
That's right.
And, you know, like I said, I would just ask for them to, you know, think about what we're going through, you know. And like you said,
are you down there talking to them?
Well, we do have people that are trying to repeal it. We have that are trying to get it to where they can fix it. And so me personally, I haven't been, but I've been to where they sit around the tables and they discuss it in the courts and stuff. So I have been down there. But we have our own, we have other people that go down and try to talk to them and get them to understand where us as women, us as workers, are coming from.
Yeah, Michaela, you know, when it comes to voting for candidates, what issue will influence your choices? And is this issue right at the top of your list?
For me personally, I feel like if there's a candidate that's not supporting 15 and a union and what I stand for and what I believe in, then for right now, I'm just not voting. I don't have, like, a candidate in my mind right now.
Are your friends, are people, you know, catching on to this cause? Are you seeing a movement growing out there in terms of the kinds of candidates that people want to elect who represent the values that you're pushing here?
Sometimes I don't really think that people understand what's really going on.
Yeah.
But for me, being in doing the 15 and the union, I understand it, and that's something that I believe in. Anyone else can have their own personal opinion about who they want to vote for, mm-hmm. but as for me and myself, that's what I'm sticking to, and that's what I'm going to do.
You know, Rosalind Pelas, workers in North Carolina have been taking hits since both the governor's office and the legislature came under Republican control. How bad is it in that state?
So it really is bad in that state, and it really is more about extremism than party. It really is that government has been taken over by extremists.
And what's happening in North Carolina, Roz?
So what's happened is that there's the three houses, the two houses of the government and the governorship are taken over by extremists in the Republican Party, and they've cut back everything. They've cut back on labor rights, women's rights, the right to vote. It's really probably one of the most repressive states in the country, and there's a tremendous fight back that people must know about that's happened there. And people are really taking this seriously. There's a huge coalition where people are every day fighting back and have been doing so for a couple years now since there's been this takeover.
Roz, the film showing tomorrow night, Standing on My Shoulders, looks at the women involved in the civil rights movement in Mississippi back in the 50s and 60s, including Fannie Lou Hamer, right? Mm-hmm. I'm getting it. I understand you're a big fan, Roz.
So I am a big fan of Fannie Lou Hamer and was since I was a teenager in the Congress of Racial Equality in North Carolina, where I came to really be challenged by her and inspired by her to do my work as a teenager. And it really has carried me through all these years. And I think it's the spirit of Fannie Lou Hamer is the spirit that we see among these workers who are fighting for just living wages, a wage that will help them provide for their families and take care of themselves. So I'm just honored to be a part of this showing and think it's so important.
Do you think that young people across the country are tuning into some of these issues? Or to what extent, Rise, do you worry that some of these causes, the idea of unions, the idea of $15 an hour, just gets sort of lost in the shuffle for so many people?
So I think for some people, these issues do get lost in the shuffle. But I think that people, given the turn, the backward turn in our we're seeing in this country, so many people are waking up. I mean, we're seeing the vitriolic language. We're seeing the rise in racism and racist violence. We are seeing murders. We're seeing, you know, all these attacks that for a certain generation they haven't seen until now. And so I think people are seeing that these rights have been taken away. Voting rights are worse than they were back in 1965 in most places. So I think people are waking up, and I think our young people are providing a lot of leadership around fighting back and asserting their rights for better pay, better equality.
Right. Crystal, Michaela, you going to see the film?
I actually will not be able to be there to see the film. I have to work.
Yeah.
I myself have to work too.
Maybe that's a good way to end this show with a point you just made. Crystal McLemore, Michaela Houston, both members of the Fannie Lou Hamer Women's Committee, and also joining us this morning by phone from North Carolina, Rosalind Pelas. Thank you all for a very good conversation.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you.